I remember that week when the tapes that we got from KPFA's coverage came down to us, and I started to listen to them, and my jaw just dropped open because the people from the
Fruit Punch
were on the scene, and in some of the cases, some of them were probably getting beaten by police as they were trying to report on what was going on. It's just riveting, riveting sound.
What do you think of what's going on right now, sir?
I think they should burn down the whole place.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. U.S. Supreme Court strikes Colorado's conversion therapy ban, India's president erases trans rights, and the queer audio legacy of This Way Out's Greg Gordon. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Dyer V.
And I'm Ava Davis.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 3rd, 2026.
The U.S. Supreme Court struck down a Colorado law banning so-called conversion therapy for minors, opening the door to dismantling similar bans nationwide. Colorado was one of 23 states with laws prohibiting health practitioners from engaging in debunked methods to change a young person's gender identity and or sexual orientation. The case was brought to federal courts by Kaylee Childs, a licensed counselor who argued the ban infringed on free speech and her right to talk with patients about her beliefs on what she calls biological sex. The court agreed, sending the case back to the lower court for further review. Out of the 9 judges, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson was the lone dissenter, arguing that conversion therapy causes lasting psychological harm. Childs was represented by Alliance Defending Freedom, a notoriously anti-LGBTQ conservative Christian legal group. In their words, the ruling allows clinicians to confirm biological reality. Childs reacted to the news in an interview with Fox and Friends.
I am elated by the ruling, and I am very excited for the kids and their families who have been simply seeking options and counseling, and now they'll get to do so.
Kristen Wagner, president and CEO of ADF, says the ruling supports science.
The science tells us, actually, that 90% of kids that are allowed to grow through puberty, they'll be just fine.
But Josh Rovinger, the legal director of GLBTQ Legal Advocates and Defenders, says that simply is not true.
Every major U.S. medical association confirms that conversion therapy is both harmful and ineffective. Studies show it increases the risk of suicidality, depression, and anxiety.
Almost 700,000 adults in the U.S. have received conversion therapy at some point in their lives, according to the Williams Institute, an independent think tank researching gender identity and policy. Survivors are 88% more likely to attempt suicide than those who have not been subjected to the treatment. Rovinger says that while this ruling is a disappointment, there is still hope.
It does not mean that conversion therapists are free from consequences. Conversion therapists who harm patients can still face legal consequences, including under medical malpractice laws. This is a setback, but not an ending.
March 31st is International Transgender Day of Visibility, a day meant for trans joy and radical acceptance. But in India, the celebration of the contributions of transgender people was marked with rebellious protests as crowds rallied against the nation's regressive reform of trans rights. Despite appeals, President Draupadi Murmu approved the bill for assent on March 30th. Ironically called the Transgender Person's Protection of Rights, it essentially undoes a 2014 Supreme Court ruling that affirmed the fundamental rights of the country's nearly 400,000 transgender citizens under the Constitution. Human Rights Watch said the bill would put transgender people at risk and criminalize their existence by introducing legal punishments for coercing or alluring people to be transgender. It would also require medical screenings before a transgender person can receive gender-affirming care and legal recognition. Protesters told Telegraph India that this legislation was passed because people in power don't understand the transgender community.
There are very few medical professionals in this country who understand and recognize trans-affirmative healthcare.
Amnesty International India Chair Akar Patel called the policy a fundamental shift in how the state views transgender people that sets a dangerous precedent. Still, protesters and activists are not losing faith and plan to keep fighting.
Even if the government is against us, like, we can form our own safe spaces, our own spaces of support. As long as we have each other and we can find each other in various spaces, I think we can stand strong.
The White House observed Transgender Day of Visibility by denouncing former President Joe Biden's presidential proclamation recognizing the day in 2024. The press release mocked the observance, saying the era of government-sanctioned delusion is over, and that official policy that only recognizes, quote, two immutable sexes, male and female. Many states are challenging the Trump administration's gender policies, and the administration is slapping back with countersuits, the latest being against Minnesota's Department of Education and High School League. The claim is that the state is violating federal law with its trans-inclusive student-athlete policies. This comes just 1 week after the International Olympic Committee officially banned transgender and intersex athletes from competing in women's events.
People united can never be divided. Come on, our people united can never be divided.
A few days later, on March 28th, millions marched worldwide for No King's Day, a demonstration opposing Trump's authoritarian policies. Minnesota Democratic Attorney General Keith Ellison described the federal complaint as a sad attempt to get attention over something that's already been in litigation for months. You see, the state of Minnesota actually filed its lawsuit first, nearly a year ago. In a video released on April 2nd, Ellison reflected on the protest, encouraging people to stay civically engaged.
We showed that people will get up out of their comfort zone and will exercise their First Amendment rights to say no to Trumpism. That is tremendous.
While the ongoing lawsuits continue to pile up, it seems the mood across the country and what's coming out of Washington don't match. A survey funded by the Human Rights Campaign Foundation reveals that over 80% of U.S. adults believe that transgender people should have the same rights and protection as everyone else and should be able to access the health care they need.
Australians in New South Wales are awaiting the imminent release of a report on legal protections against hate crimes. Last year, the government appointed retired Supreme Court Justice John Sacker to lead the initiative after an uptick in hate speech and attacks, particularly targeting queer people. The April 1st deadline to release the Sacker review has come and gone with no report or update about the delay in sight. Legislative Council member John Ruddick delivered a speech imploring the report's release.
Delaying such an important report is not the norm for this parliament, and one must question why. Secrecy breeds suspicion.
Advocates have long warned that delays in responding to the Sacker inquiry risk prolonging a lack of accountability for decades of anti-LGBTQ violence.
Advocacy groups in Kenya are launching a new campaign to get the LGBTQ community registered to vote. Organizations like INED, the Initiative for Equality and Non-Discrimination, and GALC Plus are partnering with Gen Z activists for the Queer the Ballot movement. The groups say that despite facing homophobia, violence, and legal barriers in daily life, queer Kenyans should use the ballot box to demand leaders who respect their rights. Non-binary activist Bubois Merrilies expressed how important visibility is in changing discriminatory laws.
We need systems that actually allow queer people to be able to show up in whatever way and still be able to exist.
The general election is a year away. However, next month, Kenya's Court of Appeal will hear a case challenging the criminalization of consensual same-sex relationships in the nation's penal code.
Finally, congratulations are in order for a team of transgender athletes celebrating a major win at one of the toughest races in the world. Champion trans swimmer Skylar Baylor, deaf non-binary cyclist Chella Mann, and trans non-binary marathoner Cal Kalamia won third place in the Oceanside, California Ironman, competing as Team Iron Mask. An Ironman is an extreme endurance race combining swimming, cycling, and running, often covering more than 70 miles in a single event. Kalamia told Out Magazine, "We're just excited to keep inspiring people and providing a counterweight to the other conversations about trans athletes."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending April 3rd, 2026. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Ebony Joseph and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm John Dyer V. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
This Way Out's Greg Gordon passed away on March 5th. This week and next, we pay tribute to his contributions to queer history.
I'm Harvey Milk. I'm a supervisor in San Francisco.
And I'm Greg Gordon for IMRU.
And I'm gay.
And so am I.
It may not seem like much now, but when This Way Out's founding coordinating producer Greg Gordon said it alongside Harvey Milk in 1979, it was still a big deal. It certainly was not the first time Greg had declared himself on the airwaves. He told IMRU's Michael Taylor Gray,
"I had come out in the late 60s, early 70s. In 1974, I was doing volunteer work at what was then called the Gay Community Services Center, and it was located in downtown L.A. This was, you know, the early 70s, so it was the age of workshops and rap groups and consciousness raising. And someone from KPFK posted a notice. At the time, there was a once-a-month lesbian show and a once-a-month gay men show. And the guy that was doing the gay men show was moving, and so KPFK needed some other new people. And yours truly and two other guys signed up, and we did our first show in August of 1974 on KPFK. And it was a live with phone-in show.
The old left bedrocks had not yet become today's ally-filled progressive movement, so even on public radio, the work was challenging.
We used to get abusive phone calls when we opened the phones, as well as, I know, good calls and question calls and all that, but really vile stuff.
Some 5 years later, Greg was on his way to San Francisco to interview recently elected Supervisor Harvey Milk.
Harvey has graciously taken a few minutes out of his very busy schedule to talk to us about politics in San Francisco and how he got elected, the first openly gay person to be elected to public office in California history.
I'd like to also talk about the politics in California rather than San Francisco.
That's fine.
Because I don't think there's a delineation.
You don't think that there's a difference in politics in San Francisco as opposed to, let's say, politics in Los Angeles?
It's a matter of degree. There's no moat built around the city of San Francisco that separates us from the rest. Sometimes we wish there were. but I think what takes place in San Francisco, for whatever reasons, can take place any place. It's just a matter of understanding what it's all about.
It was a wonderful interview. We did it in the back of his camera shop on Castro Street. sort of the base of his political operations. So throughout the interview, every now and then you hear a little ding, ding, ding with the camera shop door opening and closing. But he was just as warm and charming and personable as you can imagine. And, of course, an incredibly articulate advocate for queer causes and recognizing the importance of what we now call intersectionality. I mean, he got to the unions, he spoke with all the different racial and ethnic minorities, you know, so he realized that in coalition, progressive people could win.
I also reminisced with Greg about Harvey Milk.
I will always remember Greg. You and I were working for a gay and lesbian newspaper.
Coast to Coast Times. Yes.
And I remember we were busily putting the newspaper together, and you walked into my office with this ashen look on your face and just said with this complete incredulity, "I just heard on the radio that Harvey's been shot." And how did you feel at that moment? Do you remember?
Shock. And I remember that everything in the entire office just stopped, and we turned the radio up and we listened. We have to remember the context of this, too. This was like 2 or 3 weeks after our successful victory over John Briggs and the Briggs Initiative, which would have banned gay and lesbian teachers in California's public schools, or even a janitor who happened to say he thought gay people should get equal rights. He could have been fired under this measure. And so, I mean, it was such, you know, coming off of that high, which we were still experiencing, and then to have Harvey get shot, I mean, so shocking.
As president of the Board of Supervisors, it's my duty to make this announcement. Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. The suspect is Supervisor Dan
White. Has been found guilty of one count each of voluntary manslaughter.
Police have arrived at City Hall. They've got riot squad gear on. The police are pushing people off the steps.
Nowhere was Greg's skill as a producer and audio editor more evident than in the documentary Diminished Capacity. His prowess with a razor blade, yes, razor blades and quarter-inch tape, was remarkable. Here's an excerpt from that documentary on the aftermath of the assassinations of Harvey Milk and George Moscone.
I remember that week when the tapes that we got from KPFA's coverage came down to us, and I started to listen to them, and my jaw just dropped open, because the people from the
Fruit Punch,
were on the scene, and in some of the cases, some of them were probably getting beaten by police as they were trying to report on what was going on. It's just riveting, riveting sound.
What do you think of what's going on right now, sir?
I think they should burn down the whole place. City Hall doesn't represent us. The city government isn't representing us.
Something has run amok. It's real sad when somebody who murders, a legalized assassination, I don't like to see.
Well, I'm just here because I feel like I had to register my feelings some way. Although I'm not gay or anything, I just said he should have gotten so many more than 5 years.
The grating in front of City Hall continues to get torn down. Police have arrived at City Hall, at the doors of City Hall. They've got riot squad gear on. There's pushing and shoving going on. The police are pushing people off the steps. It has now broken loose. Cops are now bashing heads of the people, of indeed the people who had formed the human chain, who to protect City Hall are now getting bashed by police. The people who had been protecting City Hall are now getting dragged away by police. The police are now moving out into the crowd. Moving out into the crowd and just flailing about.
Running back. The police have literally beaten the crowd.
Gay people are carrying gay people away who have been hurt and hit. The police moved into a group of people who were sitting down and not moving and just clubbed away. And they realized that obviously our nonviolent not moving was not going to work. Gay people proceeded to run. And now pretty much there's a 15-foot distance between us and the line of police who are coming down. You can hear their voices, and here they are.
Well, I'm 6 foot nothing of muscle and bone, with a cold 45, I weigh 17 stone. Got Stetson hat and a big cigar, and I clean up trouble with my little tin star.
I'm a little tired of the weary throwaway line that there is no such thing as the gay sensibility. Of course there is such a thing as a gay sensibility. Of course gay men and women think in some fundamental ways differently from straights. It is not just about what we do in bed. It is about the echoes in the culture of who we are or who we aren't. Hi, I'm Clive Barker. Listen to This Way Out.
The community heard Harvey's call.
I called for that march on the Day of Freedom in Washington, D.C.,
and Greg heard a call to ride the Freedom Train to Washington, D.C.
The mood was festive aboard the Amtrak Freedom Train as it left the Oakland, California terminal, carrying some 75 lesbians and gay men to Sunday's National March on Washington for lesbian and gay rights.
The journey on the train has superseded my expectations many times over. I really am enjoying the sense of community, as short-lived a community as it will be, just, you know, less than a week.
I can't say the word. I don't know the word to say. It's been wonderful.
What's your name?
Dennis.
How long have you been working the railroad, Dennis?
Oh, about 30 years.
This is going to be a trip you're going to remember.
Oh, I'll remember this trip for real. I never will forget this trip.
I like the political interaction between the men and women. I'm real impressed with that. I'm seeing more and more of it, and I'm real involved in politics, and it's nice to be able to talk to men about politics.
Only thing I can say, I haven't slept much on this whole trip. I think we're probably all excited enough to where it is not bothering us that we haven't slept for 2 days now.
I appreciate the fact that we're not alone on this train, as we are not alone in the rest of the world. We have to talk to these people, and that's why we're going to Washington.
Jesse, is there anything you can compare this crowd to in your experience on the train?
A lovely, lovely crowd. I had some nice crowds, but this is the most loveliest crowd I've had.
How long have you been working in the railroad?
31 years. Still, people got nothing but compliments from all other people. Looks like you made that trip more happy. The eyes are open more now, I guess.
There's an old line communist on the train, and there's a Bircher who thinks the metric system is a communist conspiracy. We've had a chance to talk to all of those people, and that's what it was all about.
Well, it's like one big family, and I didn't expect that. Because I'm not out that much, I didn't know what to expect, really. But it's like everybody knows each other, and it's a great feeling. I love it.
We are calling heaven. Where we are going, we'll know we're there.
Lincoln, Nebraska, 2:45 a.m. Friday, October 12th.
I don't believe it.
What are you people doing up at this hour of the morning?
Come out! Bring everybody out! Oh,
we got a sign. We want you to take this as Lincoln.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
It's amazing. It's 3:30 in the morning in Lincoln, Nebraska, for Christ's sake. You realize what's happening here?
It's great to realize that the 60 of us on this train are carrying the spirit of all the places we stopped throughout the nation, because no matter where we've stopped, there has been at least one person coming out. Now tonight, 30 people in Lincoln, Nebraska, coming out at 3:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, to support us and give us their flag to carry in the march. It's fantastic.
Greg commented on the 1979 march with Michael Taylor Gray.
The 79 march was the first. Nobody knew how many people were going to show up. And I can't remember exactly now where the rally was held, but we were setting up there, so we didn't see the march at all and had no idea, you know, how many people had shown up. There was a certain hint, because within a couple of days before the march, if you went on the subways or were out and about in D.C., especially near DuPont Circle, it was like Queerville. So to see the approaching crowd, we all just went, oh, my God. You know, it was thousands and thousands of people. It activated a lot of people who had come from places where they could not be out safely. But it was their chance to be out and in a community in D.C. And boy, everybody was loving everybody. And there was entertainment and rally speakers. It was just amazing.
Next time on This Way Out, you'll hear more about the first and second marches on Washington and more about the historic career of This Way Out's founding coordinating producer, Greg Gordon, who passed away on March 5th. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was written by news editor Ebony Joseph and reported this week by Ava Davis and John Dyer V. It's produced by Brian DeShazer. All archive material courtesy of the Pacifica Radio Archives. The Tom Robinson Band and Art Garfunkel performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, celebrating their 50th year together, and in memory of Greg Gordon for his service to the LGBTQ community, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on WRN English for Europe, KBRP LP Bisbee Alaska, WXIR Rochester, New York, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.